kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole, how are you doing?
I am not having an existential crisis.
Which is good.
If you weren't on Twitch, you're not going to fucking know why I said that. So
exactly.
And I already dropped an F-bomb, so there goes our monetization that we didn't have. I'm nailing this podcast and shit, man. I am a pro. We're not alone.
I'm proud of you. No, we are not alone.
I'm so good at this is
a shit show from the beginning. From Digital Continue, Jonathan Zunger, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm great. No, the show's going great. It's I love it. It's great.
Did I get the name right?
It's actually Zungri. Like,
Zungri. Oh, son of a bitch.
The one right. time it's you a didn't fucking ask, you got it wrong.
It's a tough one. It's a tough one.
Oh, I was debating that one all day.
It could have been Zungri. And Joe would have got it wrong.
I am proud of myself. So how are you doing today?
I'm good, man. I'm just, you know, living this quarantine life. I'm growing out my beard. I mean, that's what I do normally, but now I'm just doing it more.
Me too. Oh, wait.
Yeah, man. Just trying to get through each day, you know?
You are also in the midst of, you just released Super Mash. For the people who don't know what this game is, give us the sales pitch.
Okay. Yeah. So it's a game that makes games. That's basically it. It's you have six different classic game genres like, shoot 'em up and action adventure, platformer, different things, JRPG, different things like that. And you select two of those genres and then you basically hit the mash button and the game will generate you procedurally and randomly a new game every time. And that'll have, you know, different enemies. It'll have different levels. You'll have a different player character, different weapons, different even like game design decisions, like game mechanics. It'll have different game mechanics. Yeah, it's basically we made a game generating game.
So, how?
Yeah, that's it. pain. It was a lot of pain. It was really hard. It was really, really hard. And so I worked on it for almost 3 years. But the team, I worked on it by myself for a while. And then there was like a team of three of us. And then the entirety of the team came on for about a year, year and a half. But basically, yeah, just a lot of engineers making those classic genres. Me and the rest of the people who helped out with design, trying to figure out how they would fit together, like which pieces go where, how many different types of pieces should go in each bucket that the game chooses from, what should we not let it do, what should we let it do, that those kind of decisions. But yeah, it was tough, but I love it. Like I'm really proud of it and happy with it. So yeah.
What did you not let the game do?
Well, there's this idea in the game called glitches. And so what the game can do is it can take a user input of some sort, whether that be like shooting your weapon or jumping or maybe like staying still for too long, and then it can attach it with some kind of effect, right? Which in the game is called a glitch. So or like taking damage, right? So one of the things that we didn't let it do is there are certain combinations that, I mean, the game is like really tricky anyway, but there are certain combinations that were especially agonizing. So you can't we didn't let it tie taking damage with the glitch of taking more damage, because it basically just makes every game where that combination happens, it's a one hit game. So basically that was like one of the things that we didn't let it do. But honestly, we let it do a lot. And that was like one of our decisions is like, we want it to be crazy. We kind of like wanted the game to make games that a person wouldn't think of, you know, like a normal, like, or like a game designer would be like, no, no, we can't do that. We can't do this. But we wanted the machine to be able to have as many pieces as it could so it could make, the widest variety, possible of games that it could. So we didn't put a lot of restrictions on it.
Go ahead.
No, you don't say it. Go ahead. Fuck it, ladies first. In one of my I'm not a lady. In one of my first games,
yeah,
I got a glitch where it was every time I broke a like smashed a bush in an action adventure game, then I would get a temporary attack boost.
Okay.
And I was like, fuck yeah, glitches are great. And then in my very next game, it was a platformer, and I got a glitch where every time I jumped, it filled a meter, and every four jumps would produce fire wherever I was at.
And I was like, the level was slowly burning.
That was horrible glitch to have in a platformer where you have no choice but to fucking jump.
Yeah, yeah, basically.
I wanted to cry.
Yeah, yeah, that's yeah, exactly. Sometimes the glitches show up, and it actually has to do with what difficulty you have on. So if you have it on easy, a lot of times you're only going to get good glitches. But if you have it on normal, and especially on hard, then you get a lot of the really tough glitches. So yeah. Tying jumping to lighting the stage on fire, that would be one of the things that the mash machine could throw at you. Yeah, for sure. Yep.
This is a very cool machine.
The glitches are evil, and the difficulty the difficulty, like, one of the very first requests that I got in the story portion of the show requires me to do something on hard difficulty. Like, the very first request. Is that random, or are you guys just assholes expecting people to do something hard right away?
Joe, I thought we were a bunch of nice guys at Digital Continue, but maybe we're just really mean spirited. I don't know, but yeah, no, that is those are set. Yeah, you're supposed to beat easy mashes, medium mashes, hard mashes. But yeah, I mean, the thing about it is, as we were developing it, we saw that some of the best times that we were having was when the mash machine threw something at us that we thought initially was like unbeatable. We're like, no, I think this is impossible. And then we would continue to play it, and we're like, wait a minute, maybe it's not. Maybe I can actually finish this level. And then eventually we would figure out a way to finish the level. Sometimes by like doing something weird or playing in a strange way. But we would you could figure out a way to kind of like beat the machine. And we found that so satisfying. So we wanted to have that hard difficulty level in there so people could feel that experience too. But yeah, the mash machine. This is fun. I wanted to characterize the mash machine as like mean looking, like in the game, in the story of the game. I wanted it to be like either like mean looking or like a crazy kind of like spazzing out or like glitching out kind of machine, just to kind of like show the players that this machine does not necessarily have your well-being in mind. Like it's going to do what it's going to do. We didn't end up going that way, but the mash machine can definitely throw some tough stuff at you. That's for sure.
I think there's a lot to be said for the disclaimer at the beginning.
Yeah.
That straight up says some of this might not be completable.
Yeah. Yeah.
Some of it is just too damn hard.
Yeah.
Because one of the first things that I had on my list to ask you about was, how did you balance the difficulty of it? But then I loaded up the game and it was like, yeah, there's no balancing here. Good luck.
Yeah. All the difficulty levels, normal and hard especially, are pretty tough. But basically the way there is some things in there, like the amount of glitches or the amount of bad glitches that you have goes up when you get, you go to harder difficulty levels, and actually the length of the levels will also is also kind of determined a lot of times by if you take a long, like, you know, you can change the difficulty as well as the length of the level. And if you take a long level, sometimes that will make it that much harder too, that rather than like a short level, you know? So like a long normal mash might actually be pretty challenging as well.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. How did you get? How did you guys do? How far did you get? Did you try it?
Story wise, I'm still early because I have mainly just been doing like the random mashes over and over, just to see what it throws at me. I love seeing all the different storylines that the game comes up with in the beginning that usually has nothing to do with the game or the title screen.
Yep, that's true. They're different systems. But that's one of my favorite parts of the game too, is the randomized titles and the randomized stories, because it will insert the actual goal of the game into that story. And sometimes they come out really, really funny. Like, it'll tell you about how you're being talked to by like the benevolent all spirit, you know, this benevolent spiritual figure. And then the benevolent all spirit will tell you like, go and like eliminate 10 snitches. Like, so, and that's just like random, like procedural stuff that's happening. That's not written by us. So that's pretty funny.
I got possibly one of the greatest title screens today before we started playing. The name of the game is called Dude Bro Teeth Kickin'.
Love it. You know what's great about that is that like there's a chance that you're the only one in the world that will get that.
I know.
There are so many different names in the genre buckets, and it actually sometimes switches, like it will swap out certain parts of the name based on the goal that you have. And so there's like no one knows. I'm the one who kind of like came up with all those names, and I'm like constantly surprised with what it spits out. Like, because there's too many permutations. Like, about a year into development, it was already over a million, and now once we release the game, I have no idea how many it can do. So that's one of my favorite parts of the game too.
Good lord. And
how did you decide which genres you were going to include for the cartridges?
Right. Well, there was a lot of talk about it. So like when I first started working on this game, my boss, it was my boss's idea, and the game director, Joe Tringali, and he was like, I want a game where you can pick genres, and then say mash, and it will make you a brand new game every time. And I was like, huh. I was like, that sounds awesome. And then I was like, how do we do that? I don't know. But I was like, we're going to do it, you know? So basically we had to try to figure out which genres had, like, one of the first things I did was like, okay, which genres have some kind of commonality, right? Like, okay, well, if we take action adventure and we take platformer and then we take like Metroidvania, then basically they all have enemies and they all have player characters and they all have weapons. And I was like, okay, here are some commonalities. Okay, these are buckets that can be swapped in and out. And then we hit a snag where I was like, I really want to do JRPG, but JRPG has turn-based combat. It doesn't have like action-based combat like the rest of these. So I was like, how do we do that? And we had to like think through that problem. But a lot of it was just like, which games have some commonalities with each other that will give us a chance to be able to do this. And then like, which genres from the classic gaming years, do people have a lot of affection for? So that's like JRPG and like the very Zelda like action adventure game got in there. And that kind of stuff. So it had to do with like what was practical and what we could actually do and what people, actually had a fondness for looking back.
I love it.
Yep.
So, the genres, there are six of them in the game.
Yeah.
Let's go through all of them and tell us what the defining characteristics of each genre is and what it brings to the game.
Sure. Great. Okay. So platformer is loosely inspired by Super Mario Brothers, but not just Super Mario Brothers. Like, most of the genres were inspired by one game mostly, but also have elements from other platformers of that era. So we were inspired by Sonic, and we were also inspired by things like Kirby's Dream Land and stuff like that. So, but platformer, inspired by Mario, the main thing is jumping. Right, you're jumping, you're moving from side to side. That's the main mechanic, is that you are jumping over gaps, you're jumping on the heads of enemies, that kind of stuff. Action adventure is loosely inspired by Zelda, And that is mostly having to do with moving from screen to screen in a, from a top-down perspective and fighting while also looking for items. So a lot of the genres have a system that will randomly place like gates and walls and things like that, and you will have to find an item in order to kind of like pass through that wall. So there will be like a wall of ice. You can find like a blowtorch, and you can kind of like get through that wall of ice. So action adventure features that stuff too. Metroidvania is loosely inspired by like Castlevania and Metroid. And yes, like we're saying Metroidvania because we don't want to get sued, so we can't say Metroidvania. So we took the I out and it's just Metroidvania. But yeah, basically that was loosely inspired by Metroidvania and also a little bit of Contra. So it has a lot to do with jumping and shooting. It's like platformer, but it has more to do with fighting. Like you're shooting, you're swinging a sword, that kind of stuff. JRPG is, inspired by Final Fantasy. And in my mind, a lot of it has to do with leveling up. That's the only genre where you leveled. So as you gain experience points, you can kind of like your characters get stronger. And it's also defined by turn-based combat, right? So you get into a collision with an enemy and then you kind of go to a battle screen and you can kind of like choose attacks or spells, things like that. Shoot 'em up is inspired by Raiden. And that's basically like those old arcade shooters that had the long vertical screen and you had a spaceship, or like 1942 is another good one that we looked at. I researched a ton of games for this. And you're kind of like on the bottom of the screen and you're shooting and you get power-ups and you start to get these massive weapons, that kind of stuff. We have, what else do we have? JRPG, action adventure, platformer, Metroidvania. Stealth. Right, stealth. Mm-hmm. Right. So stealth is inspired by Metal Gear, the old school Metal Gear games for the NES and that kind of stuff. So basically stealth is sneaking, right? You're kind of like trying to avoid getting noticed from the enemy, sneaking through the base, and trying to accomplish your objectives.
I want to appreciate the fact that I got a stealth game earlier that the weapon was fucking homing missiles.
So I'm guessing that's like one of the times when you had like a fairly easy mash, right? Like that's like the mash machine threw you a bone there because like, yeah, no one who's going to be able to stand. Usually in stealth games, you have like punching and like sleeping darts, but you had like missiles. So
yeah, the funny thing is the negative glitch was some kind of ghost demon or whatever.
Yes.
That took up like 2/3 of the screen and killed me. I couldn't beat the mash.
Yeah. The glitch ghost. Yeah. That's, he's inspired by an old game called Sinistar where I don't know if you guys are familiar with that. It's like an old spaceship game where the longer you played, this thing would show up and try to like destroy you. It was a seemingly invulnerable like star that would follow you. But anyway, the glitch ghost in our game like breaks through the screen basically and then begins to chase you and try to get you. Yeah, the glitch ghost. I love the glitch ghost.
How do you get rid of him?
You can't.
Because the homing missiles didn't do shit against him.
Yeah, no, he's pretty invulnerable, but you can get rid of him by going to a different screen. So if you go through one of those glitch kind of doors or portals, we call them connectors, and you go to another part of the game, then he will lose you. You can like basically run away from him and he'll have to find you again. Yeah. So that's a way that you can get around him.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So what was the choice to settle on six genres? Was it just like a technical limitation?
Yeah, man. Yes. I mean, it was like we were making six games, you know, we were making six games at the same time. Initially, we wanted to make a lot more and have a lot more genres. But as we started to make them, we're like, no, because not only it's actually more than six. We weren't just making six. We were making like because there were so many different pieces in all of the different like Metroidvania isn't just Metroid. It's also kind of like Castlevania. It's also kind of like Contra. So we had all these different pieces that we had to make of these genres. So it was actually like way more than six games. It was basically just like a time constraint and also like a technical constraint. We would have loved to put way more in.
What was on the chopping, like the cutting room floor? What was on the chopping block? What?
Oh man, dude. I mean, initially we wanted to have 3D games in there, you know, we wanted to do like a first person shooter, you know?
Oh man.
yeah, I know.
Now you want to do a psychological horror.
Now, yes, yeah, psychological. I mean, so we had a lot of discussions and debates about what genres should be included, but like, I campaigned for horror for you, Cole. I definitely did for a while. I was like, we got to put a horror game in there. It's so different. I mean, that's one of the things is like, if you have a genre and it's really different, either in its art assets or in how it feels, then that's what makes the mashing really good. So like, I fought super hard for horror. I mean, we were thinking about like dating simulator, like that would have been great.
Yes.
We were thinking about like text adventure. We were thinking like, I fought pretty hard for text adventure for a while. I mean, it's just like a lot of really crazy games that could have gone in. But again, yeah, time constraints and money and like just manpower, just like the amount of people that you need to make like more than 6 games at a time. You know what I mean? It's just like crazy. So
Beer is my jam, said Rhythm Battle Royale DLC.
Yeah, right.
Or point and click.
Yeah.
Earlier he said Battle Royale Shmup, and I'd be down for that. I'd play that shit.
Oh dude, Battle Royale Shmup.
I mean, yeah, we already have a puzzle battle royale with Tetris 99, so anything is possible.
True. Right, right. Tetris 99, right, exactly. Puzzle battle royale, right?
The first combination I put together just to see what it would do was an action adventure and a shmup. And like it looks so much like a normal top down Kimco game that I would play. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, like these Pixel F-13 jets start flying across the screen, blowing shit everywhere. And I was like, it was a literal mash of the two.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, so wait, so you were in like the Zelda like action adventure, or were you in like the jet? Okay. And then the plane started coming
and
out of nowhere.
And then the plane started coming and all I had was a boomerang.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I've seen it do that before. That's one of my favorite. One of my favorite things. Yep. It's awesome. It's like helicopters aren't supposed to be in Hyrule.
Yeah. Oh, look, a tank is on the hill and all I have is a boomerang. Guess I'll go smash a bush so that I have attack power.
Yeah. The funny thing about like the idea about getting like attack power from smashing bushes or cutting bushes, like one thing I like about the glitch system is that like the game kind of decided on that game mechanic. I mean, if it had been like a real full blown game, someone would, you know, use some kind of strange like narrative justification, like he draws power from the forest by destroying, and then like you can gain your attack. So someone would have written something for that, you know. But I like that the Mash Machine can kind of like think of those kind of things on its own.
I can't even imagine the programming behind that.
Yeah. Yeah, it was amazing. The lead programmer, this guy Owen Bell, he's a savant. He's pretty amazing. And this was a hard game to program. So the architecture alone, you know, working with him, it's pretty amazing. Pretty amazing what he accomplished.
Cole, what were you gonna ask?
I don't even remember now because I just suddenly got like lost in the thought of point and click and a point and click platformer and literally having to click the word jump every time you wanted to jump.
Right.
My whole head got so zoned into the thought of what that would look like that I lost everything else I was thinking about.
Yeah, totally. Right. Right.
Dating sim rhythm game. Like now, right? Is DLC a possibility for a game like this, or is it fairly closed off the way it is?
No, I mean, we are thinking about DLC. I mean, we're still trying to see how well it sells, but we have always wanted to do DLC. And I mean, we were just talking about you know, how much fun it is to think about new genres that you could add and how much that would like the cool thing about it is like when you think about a new genre, not only is it cool on its own, but then when you think about it mashing with all the other genres, it's exponentially cool, right? Like, so if you put in point and click adventure game and then all of a sudden it's mashing with the other 6, what does that mean? What is a point and click shooter? What is a point and click Metroidvania? You know what I mean? Like, And then you add more to that, and it just grows and grows and grows. It just gets cooler and cooler. So, no, we are definitely thinking about DLC.
Speaking of adding things to the game, there are dev cards. I haven't really dabbled with them too much because I like, are they a limited resource? Once you use one, is it gone for good, or how do the dev cards work?
Right. Yeah. So the dev cards are basically like they allow you to control the chaos is how we say it. It's basically like the mash machine gives you something crazy, you know, and then you're like, okay, I like this, but it was really hard, right? I don't want the glitch ghost coming after me. So what you can do is you can go into your, you basically get dev cards for winning mashes. So you accrue them as time goes on. You go and you get a different glitch and you're like, okay, I'm going to replace the glitch ghost with health up. So every time whatever was triggering the glitch ghost now gives you extra health, right? So, or like maybe you have a sword in your top-down shoot 'em up game, right? And you're like, this is fun, but it's way too hard. All right, I'll go give myself the homing missiles to make this easier. So you basically use the dev cards to change the experience. You can do it before you start playing the game, or after you've, like if you're playing it and you've lost a couple times, you can do it after the fact as well. And there's two different kinds. The regular dev cards, they are expended when you use them, but then there's also kind of like sparkly ones. There's like, you know, I don't know if you remember like collecting cards, or like I used to collect these Marvel cards and they had like holograms. So we have like hologram sparkly special kind of rainbow cards. And basically those are infinite. You can use them as many times as you want.
Okay, good. Cause I got one and I was like, oh, I don't want to use it if it's gone for good.
That was right. Here too. I was like, I will sit on these until the end of time.
Like, what if right. I need to save it for something?
That's true. However, I believe the way that we did it was if you use one, it gives you a higher chance to get the foil version of that one. So if like you have the machine gun or something and you use your dev card, the more you see that weapon in the game, the higher chance you have to get the foil version. But I get the inclination to kind of just sit on the cards. That might be something I would do too.
It's the RPG part of me, man. Like saving those mega elixirs for the final boss battle.
right. Just stockpiling stuff. You just become a hoarder.
And then you never use it anyway.
Yeah.
That's what I always thought of, like a game like Fallout 3 or some of those like really good RPGs that were like really challenging until you just had enough health potions or stim packs. And like after I have 100 stim packs, I'm like immortal. Like I can't nothing can kill me ever. Yeah.
Yet you still buy out the vendor when you go to the store.
Right.
And there's like the overwhelming fear when you do break down and use one, you're like, oh my God, I'm not going to be able to beat this game now. What have I done? It's just existential dread.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my Lord. So what is next for Digital Continue? Is it just focusing on Super Mash? Focusing on DLC for it, or do you have other game design ideas in mind?
Yeah, so we often have like two or three projects going at the same time. I think that we've released a game every year for the past like 3 or 4 years. So right now we have other projects going. We have one that's kind of like more than halfway through development. We're also, like I said, thinking about DLC. We're thinking about new genres for Super Mash, right? So that's definitely on the horizon. I'm also working on a new project. So lots of cool stuff on the horizon.
So you'll be busy.
Yeah, no, we're definitely busy. I mean, that's one cool thing about, you know, everybody kind of being at home is like, you can kind of make you can play video games from home for sure, but you can also kind of make them. You can also make video games from home. It's like, it's probably not as good, but it you can definitely do it. So, we've all been working pretty hard.
I was going to ask, has the virus affected the development of the game or thrown a wrench into the works anywhere?
Well, I guess there is one thing. Like a lot of times when you make a game, you kind of like you make a an early prototype. And sometimes that can be even in paper. Like you just kind of make a paper prototype. And so that's what I've been doing for my new game. The new game that I'm working on is I've made a paper prototype, but when I want to play it with someone, I kind of have to do it through Skype. And that's like real hard. Like it's kind of hard to do that. Like I'd rather just like sit down at a table and like see the person and play with them. But yeah, no, for the most part, we're actually doing pretty okay, I think.
It's such a weird time, and I can't imagine how weird it is being in New York.
Oh yeah. Yeah, man. Yeah, no, it's super weird. I remember, I mean, like, basically we kind of like left the city. My wife and my daughter, we left the city and my parents live in upstate in Westchester. So we're living with them. Although like New York City's like the worst place in the nation and Westchester's like the second worst place. So like, we're kind of like out of the fire into the fire. But, yeah. So basically, just kind of, I don't know. It's like living in New York, like you kind of know people that have gotten it. Like I know 8 or 9 people now that have gotten the coronavirus that, you know, I know them personally. And thank God I haven't gotten it, but I kind of think that might be the difference between like living in New York and some of the other places is that like everybody who lives in New York, we all know a bunch of people who got it and they tell us about it and how terrible it is. And basically it's pretty scary. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm scared shitless of this thing. It's yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So many people seem to like just brush it under the rug and be like, it's just a common cold. I'm like, no, it's not, you moron.
No. Yeah, it is not. And I remember the last week. So the last week we actually went into work and then, you know, Digital Continue, like it was kind of, you know, like every other business, everybody was told to work from home. But I remember the last couple of days, I was going to look at a new apartment, right? Cause that's kind of the reality of it in New York is you kind of always have to find a new apartment to rent, whenever your lease is up. And like, so I'm on the subway and I'm just like, this is dumb. Like I am making I'm currently making a mistake. I should not be on the subway right now next to all these people. And you can tell it was before masks, right? Like it's before anyone knew to wear a mask, right? If they weren't sick, but everybody is kind of like looking down and trying to like keep as much distance, but it's the subway. So it's like, you just can't. So, yeah, that's crazy.
I'm uncultured. I have never ridden a subway.
I wouldn't either. We don't have any public transport down here. Right. We don't even have taxis. Fuck, we don't even got... What am I joking about? We live on a dirt road. That's not an exaggeration. I don't even got fucking blacktop.
can you get an Uber? Can you get an Uber where you are?
No.
No?
No. No Uber, no Instacart, no taxis.
No Instacart, no
buses.
See, at least I can get an Uber here. You don't have a car, you're fucked.
And everything is stupid far away. Like, the closest Walmart is an hour away.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah.
We're so far out, even Dollar General doesn't want to be here.
How is that possible that Dollar General doesn't want anything to do with that?
Dollar General is like 45 minutes away.
How?
Yeah.
There's two of them in my town.
It's funny because they put one... There's a little town between where I live and my sister live, my original hometown. It's like 30 miles apart. And they put a Dollar General on this no man's land corner in this little town where previously the only little store, the town's called Hitchens, and the store was called the Hitchin Post. They put a Dollar General across from the Hitchens Post. And everybody's just like, who the fuck's even gonna shop there? Hitchens has like 80 people, tops. And then I think, well, they don't want to come here, but then I remember we only got 40, so even that is too low a number for Dollar General. I see the memes about them putting every Dollar General on like a piece of land in the middle of nowhere, and I'm like, aw. Can't even get that.
I am in the middle of nowhere.
I'm absolutely out in no man's land.
I want a Dollar General.
Dollar General. Because the fucking we have one town in this store. Anybody that's listened to the podcast more than once has heard this story.
We've got one town in this store.
We have one store in this town. That's how fucked up that is. but like, it's literally a restaurant, a grocery store, a pawn shop, a gas station, a horse tackle shop. You can get night crawlers there if you're going fishing. It's all in one place. They have an area that's for furniture, which is like, they have appliances, but the stove is like one of those that you actually got to build a wood for in one side.
Wow.
To bake in the other side.
I love that a pawn shop makes the cut though. Like,
yeah. Yeah. Cause rednecks got to have their guns.
Oh no.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeehaw.
Yeah. You can go down and get you some horseshoes and some 9mm rounds while you're at it. You can be a right royal cowboy up here in the middle of the woods.
The essentials.
Yeah. You know, they stayed open through all this because, you know, where are you going to get your ammo at?
Right. Got that.
Can't go all the way into Walmart. It's dangerous in there.
Oh, geez. So anyway, Jonathan, what are you playing these days when you're not working on Super Mash? What are you firing up and enjoying?
Right. Well, I just finished Streets of Rage 4. Have you guys had a chance with that yet? Have you had a chance to
yes,
play it?
Okay. Really enjoy it. Some of the music I'm hit or miss on, but I really enjoy the game. It nailed the gameplay.
I love it. I love it. I mean, you guys know, like, I love classic game genres, and beat 'em up is like one of my all-time favorites. So Streets of Rage 2 I really like, but all those old beat 'em up games, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, but Streets of Rage 4, I mean, I felt like it almost felt like a 2D beat 'em up that was informed by like newer beat 'em ups, like a Devil May Cry, or like, you know, the fact that you can juggle people, and the fact that you can, like, the combo system feels really deep, and it just, man, it's just fantastic and short, which is nice too. Like, I got through it and like pretty fast.
So you can replay it. It encourages replayability.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. That's fantastic. Fantastic game.
And it's on Game Pass.
Oh, I didn't know that. Is it?
How long did it take? Did it take us 45 minutes to mention Game Pass?
Yeah, it did.
Oh, it's a new record.
Well, the episode's only like 35 so far.
Oh, still a record.
Yeah.
God, we love Game Pass.
I love Game Pass too. I think Game Pass is one of the most awesome things to happen to video games in a really long time. But why do you guys talk about Game Pass? Do you have like a sponsorship or something?
Not at all.
No, you just really fucking love it.
You just love it, yeah. I love it too. I think it's the best.
At this point, like, we should have a sponsorship.
We just don't know who to make puppy dog eyes at to get that.
Did it?
Also, we only have like 4 viewers, so.
Did it feel like, I mean, for me, when I first played Game Pass and also PlayStation Now, when I first played those services, I was like, this feels like going into a video game shop and being able to play whatever I want. That's how it felt to me. I was like, this is like the greatest thing that I've seen in a really long time.
Yeah.
It's just a library of games that I love it. And your previous game, Next Up Hero, that was on Game Pass, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yes. Yes, it was. It was on Game Pass for a while. I don't know if it's still on there.
I don't think it is, because I remember buying it before it left.
Right. Yeah. So that, I mean, it's just so cool to have a game on Game Pass, you know, just the fact that, and so many more people play it too, because you, like, when you play game, I don't know if you guys play this way, but when I play Game Pass, I play games that I think I normally wouldn't have played because I wouldn't want to spend like $20 or so for them. So I play a lot more.
I play a lot of new releases. I love the fact that they have brand new games that just launch direct to the service.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I tend to err more toward the AAAs that I would normally ignore, because we get most indies through the show, and so I have a disgusting backlog of indies. But like there's AAAs that like Devil May Cry 5 I was super excited for, but it came out the same time as The Division 2.
Right.
And Devil May Cry 5 was something I would play by myself, whereas my friends were like, why the fuck wouldn't you buy Division 2? Right. And so that one won in the budget battle. And then when they added Devil May Cry 5 to Game Pass, I was like, well, see y'all fuckers later.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. So do you guys, I mean, I guess I noticed on, like, you usually, you guys cover a lot of indie games then. Is that, like, kind of exclusively the thrust of the show then?
I don't know. The main focus of the show is basically just bullshitting about games, but I guess... I guess some of the episodes, yeah, we really do heavily focus on game reviews anymore.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's cool that you guys cover so many indie games, because I always wanted something like that. You know, I always wanted it seems like there's a lot of people who cover like AAA games, but not a lot of people who cover indie games. And so it's cool that you guys cover so many.
Yeah. We love to cover whatever we can, and, you know, hopefully they're all good.
It is kind of funny because people will be like, oh, what are you reviewing this week? And then, like, I'll rattle off a good 15 indie games.
Yeah.
And then I get a blank stare. There have been weeks. Nine's the average. But you get a blank stare because when they think of games, they only think of AAA titles. And so then indies fall under the radar, and I'll be like, no, I played some really dope shit this week that was just, you know, small, and you wouldn't have heard of it if somebody didn't come up to you and go, hey, that was fucking awesome.
Right, right. Yeah, so. Yeah, well, that's awesome that you guys do that, so thanks.
Hey, thank you for listening and liking what we do. I'm not sure why you enjoy it, but thank you.
And for letting us talk about your games. I mean, there are small indie devs who look at us and go, now you're too small even for us.
Yeah.
We have had people tell us that we're too small for them to come talk to us. And it's like, okay, well, but we're going to review your game anyway. So, you know?
Yeah, it's, right.
I'll just make sure I bring that up in the review. Get fucked.
No.
Joe wouldn't let me do that. He would tell me before the show, don't you dare bring that up. Behave. Give the review.
Well, no, I mean, like, it's an honor to be on the show and, like, you know, get an interview going. This is great. I'm, you know, thankful, super thankful for it.
I'm glad you had the time to come on and chat with us.
Yeah, man.
It's no good problem. Good stuff for a good game. I'm really enjoying Super Mash. Tell us more, like, how much is it? Where can we get it? Give us all the details about Super Mash.
Totally. Yeah. So basically it's on all the it's on all the consoles. So you can get it on the Nintendo Switch. You can get it on the PlayStation 4 or the Xbox One. It's on all of their online stores, right? Digital download. And then you can also get it on the PC from the Epic Store. And hopefully, I don't know. We'll see. Maybe Steam someday. We'll see. Basically anywhere that you can get, an indie game, you can get it.
Any talks of a physical release anywhere?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think. Okay, so no confirmation yet that I think I'm allowed to share, but I think that there is one coming.
Probably shouldn't say who.
I'm not gonna say who, but I mean, pretty much everybody knows the people who make physical copies for indie games. If you're into that, you kind of know who they are. So a physical copy is probably coming from one of them.
Limited one.
I mean, there's a handful of companies now that are doing physical copies of games. So it's not just limited run anymore.
If I'm not mistaken, I've seen Radalika do a couple physicals lately.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's cool. It's a cool thing to have, especially if you like a game. Having a physical copy is so cool.
Fingers crossed we'll see a physical for Xbox, but I know that never happens. Because Xbox has their minimum print run requirements or something like that, and no one ever does physical releases of Xbox games.
Oh, I don't think I noticed that, but you're right. I can't think of that. I can't think of an Xbox game that's been like that. So
I was amazed because I think Signature Edition, they're doing Streets of Rage, and they're actually doing one for Xbox. Amazingly,
yeah. Mm. Hmm. Interesting. So
I might have to pick that one up, but
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. Super Mash. Good stuff.
Yeah, thanks, guys. I really appreciate it. Thank you for inviting me on the show. This has been super fun.
Where can people keep up to date with you?
Yeah, sure. I'm on Twitter at it'll be at Zungz, Z-U-N-G-Z. Send me a message. Let me know what you're thinking about the game.
Cool. All right. We will let you get going. Thank you so much for doing this, and you have yourself a wonderful, evening. Yeah, it's 10 o'clock.
Yeah. Yeah, it's late. Great. Yeah, you guys too. Thank you so much for having me on. Talk to you guys soon.
Take care. Bye. All right.
We did it.
We did. Hooray.
I got interrupted by the rabbit, the cat, and my daughter. Let's see how the rest of this show goes.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, there is more show to go. A lot of news this week. A lot of stuff to talk about. Should we just dive right into things?
Okay, let's go.
All right. I'm just going to go in order here of how I wrote things. I don't know if there's any importance order or not, but Ubisoft announced they will be holding a Ubisoft Forward event on July 12th, showing off new game reveals and announcements. So it looks like Ubisoft in July is doing their E3 showcase.
Very nice. Very nice. Interesting that they're going to do it alone and not as part of either Xbox or PlayStation.
I kind of figured they would do their own thing. They've done their own at E3 for the past how many years?
Have they? Haven't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, they usually like show some during the Xbox, and then they do their own. Okay. They're like, watch for more later. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they need to have their own event for Just Dance, right?
That is true. Just Dance.
Do you think we're going to see anything surprising from Ubisoft this year, or do you think it's just going to be more the status quo?
I'm not expecting anything to really rattle the cages. That's not to say that I don't enjoy Ubisoft games or whatever. It's just that they're good at what they're good at. And then carry on.
Yeah.
We might... A little piece of me is expecting another expansion for The Division, though.
That'd be neat. Or maybe Division 3?
No, I don't think we're ready for Division 3. I give them at least another year before they even announce the Division 3.
I guess we'll
see. So I think we'll at least get one more, maybe two more expansions.
Root beer's my jam, jumping the gun on some of the news. Who cares about Ubisoft when there's a new Paper Mario game launching July 17th? There is.
That's soon.
I know, just out of nowhere today, Nintendo announced Paper Mario the Origami King launching on the Switch July 17th. Out of friggin' nowhere.
Damn.
I don't think they had any kind of event planned. It was just, hey, Paper Mario's coming, and it's coming in like 3 months. Have fun. 2 months.
Fascinating. Yeah, I've never played Paper Mario. I'm not familiar with it. Like, I recognize it when I see it, but...
Nah.
I did see a GIF where somebody had, like, pasted Paper Mario next to an origami crane, and it was like... leaked footage of a boss battle, and that was funny.
Oh, Lord. Carnage, a GIF. Yes, I heard it, too.
Nah, fight me.
Grumble, grumble, grumble. Ubisoft also announced that Assassin's Creed Valhalla will support, quote, at least 4K 30 frames per second on the Xbox Series X, which has a lot of people pissed off. They're like, 4K 30 frames per second is what we're doing now. Why are we going to a whole new, you know, a whole new console generation just to still have 30 frames per second? What do you think about this?
Can I be a million times honest here? I don't give a fuck if it's 30 frames or 60. I don't give a fuck if it's 190 frames. I don't give a fuck if it's 560 frames. Does it look good? Do I enjoy it when I'm playing it? Then I'm happy. I don't get the same people who will bitch, oh, it's only 30 frames per second on Xbox, are the same people who sit down and play a Switch in 720p. So just I don't care.
I know. Some of the people who bitch about that are the neckbeards who are PC Master Race spend $4,000 on a PC.
Stop cutting into the bones, Joe. But I mean, even with that, I'm like, my PC could easily like blow that shit out the water. And I'm still over here like, I don't give a fuck. If I'm enjoying it, that's all I care about. You know?
Yeah.
I'm not capable of growing a neck beard. I just can't do it.
I mean, when it comes to games that have a performance versus visual setting, I'll take performance. I'll take 60 frames per second and a lower resolution over 4K visuals and 30 frames per second. Mm-hmm. I prefer the smoother movement.
An X, so I don't have 4K as it is. I have the upscaled 4K. The wannabe pretend 4K. And I'm okay with it. I think my games look goddamn fantastic. And 90% of what I play are indie games that couldn't hit that metric anyhow. So I don't care. I'm just not capable of it.
No. There was also, did you see the Unreal Engine, Unreal 5 Engine showcase tech demo video that happened this week?
I saw the video. I didn't see the whole thing surrounding it. I just watched the video because that was all I cared about. And I think that it's a good representation of what we can expect games to look like next gen.
Yeah.
I did notice that there was no actual ray tracing in it, though.
Yeah. And it wasn't 4K either. They made a big deal that this entire tech demo was done on a PS5. But it was not 4K.
So it's, I don't know. I think that maybe people need to temper their expectations a little. I think we're still going to see a noticeable jump in quality, but it might not be what the neckbeards are rooting for.
Yeah. Oh, well, there are new rumors coming along that Diablo 2 Remastered is apparently coming this year. I'm sure if Chris were here, he would be losing his shit. Just the rumor of a Diablo 2 remaster.
Okay.
Nothing for you?
I think I've even played one of the Diablos that was gifted to me, and I played it with a friend, and I was like, this is a thing.
I like Diablo 3.
It's fine.
I would be interested in a remastered Diablo 2. I would give it a go if it comes to console. The Mafia trilogy looks to be happening with the full release of details scheduled for May 19th. So they announce an announcement, which I love. There were Microsoft store pages that popped up for Mafia 2 that is scheduled to release on May 19th. So I'm guessing they're going to do a reveal trailer and be like, Mafia 2 available right now.
Bah!
Yeah, and then Mafia Definitive Edition was supposedly slated for August 28th. The store page also says that the first game is a complete ground-up remake and not a remaster.
Interesting.
Yeah. Not sure about Mafia 2. I'm guessing that's just a remaster.
Okay. That is... Coca-Cola's canceled. What am I canceled for?
I don't know. What'd you do now?
What did I do?
More game announcements. Tony Hawk Pro Skater 1 and 2 are being remastered for Xbox One, PS4, and the Epic Game Store. They're going to be packaged together, and that is released September 4th. Mm-hmm. So Tony Hawk Pro Skater coming back.
Well, that's sooner than I was expecting.
Why, what did you expect?
I don't know. I figured it would be either closer to the end of the year or at the beginning of next year.
Hmm.
Not sure why. Just when I saw the rumors, I was like, okay, for some reason it just resonated that it would be I haven't had my shots yet this week, so please be patient with me.
It's okay.
I'm doing the best I can, but because of Diablo 3. But yeah, I don't know, I just expected it to be quarter one.
Well, nope, coming out September 4th.
Yeah. Surprise! Yay!
Hooray! Tim Schafer confirmed that Full Throttle, Day of the Tentacle, and the Grim Fandango remakes are all coming to Xbox later this year. They've been on PlayStation for a while, so it's nice to see them finally coming over to Xbox now that they're an Xbox studio.
Ah, I'm not familiar with, I don't think, any of the games that you mentioned.
They are old LucasArts point-and-click adventure games.
Oh, but I'm down. You had me at point and click. Yeah. Yep. I'm here all of a sudden. It's fine.
Yeah. I think this leaves the Bard's Tale remastered and resnarkled edition on PS4 as the last Xbox Studios title from their recent pickups that isn't on Xbox.
Hmm.
And that's the one with Carrie Elway doing the voice acting for the Bard. So I really want that one to come over to Xbox.
I can't imagine why it wouldn't eventually.
I'd say there's
just licensing to hammer out.
I don't know. I figured it would have show up already. They brought the Bard's Tale trilogy and they brought the Bard's Tale 4. But
that is true.
Not remastered and re-snarkled.
Meh. Cross your fingers, stand your eyes.
Some sad news, the Darwin Project is shutting down.
That is sad, because I had a really good time with it when I played it, but also it kind of just didn't stand out in a sea of Battle Royale.
Yeah, they announced that the previous update is the last, and servers will remain up at least through the end of the year, but it looks like that game is on its way out, so play it while you can.
Get them achievements and go.
Yep.
That's a shame.
Some Game Pass news. It was announced that Alan Wake is joining Game Pass for PC and console on May 21st.
Interesting.
Yeah. And then Final Fantasy IX joined this week.
Very nice.
Good stuff.
Yep.
And last bit of news I have, probably the most controversial news of the week. Exavient is bringing back the Culling Origins once more.
Do you want me to repeat what I said to you on Skype?
Go ahead.
I don't know why Exavient isn't just focusing on Don't Die Minerva.
I agree.
Just you got one good game, put your all into it and make it a banger, and, you know, let what is dead be dead. Don't be trying to pet cemetery the Culling, okay?
See, I wouldn't mind if they were bringing it back. It's my big problem with it is the pricing model.
The pricing model is garbage pants.
It is absolutely atrocious. Well, first off, the game was available May 14th, so it's out now. The game will cost $5.99, and it has a one-day free trial. If you purchased it before or if you downloaded it while it was a free-to-play game, you do not need to rebuy it. So that's a positive right there.
Okay.
Now comes the negatives. You get one free match online per day, and then you need to buy tokens to play.
Unless you win.
Yes, if you win.
And then you get to have a second one.
Yes, if you win, you get a token. Otherwise, you need to buy tokens to play the game. You can get 3 tokens for $1, 10 tokens for $3, 20 tokens for $5, or they have passes, where you can get 7 days for $2 or 30 days for $6 of unlimited play.
I want to know who told them this was a good pricing model.
Just Dance. That's my guess, because they have the friggin' Just Dance music pass, and it seems very similar in pricing and functionality to what Ubisoft is doing with that. And it sucks.
It is absolutely hot garbage.
The way Ubisoft does it is you're getting additional content on top of what you already bought. It's like getting the DLC, but instead of buying the songs, it's like a streaming model that they have on Just Dance. But in this, you can't play the goddamn game online unless you continue to pay.
Yeah.
Yeah, Root Beer is my jam, saying it's like an arcade. If you lose, insert quarter.
And we see what happened to arcades. We were all very much fucked that and created consoles.
Yeah.
So that we could play at home.
Yeah, I don't understand the decision going behind their pricing. It seems like they were gaining a lot of goodwill with Don't Die Minerva, and they were turning their company image around, and then the Culling Origins is back again, and they seem to have squandered all of that goodwill, and it sucks.
It does. It really does. I don't know. I was so disappointed when I saw it, because all this time I'm like, Don't Die Minerva is good, and I'm looking forward to seeing where it goes. And I want them to put their energy into this because they have something with Don't Die Minerva.
Yeah.
And I've had to really do some verbal gymnastics when I have recommended Don't Die Minerva, and people see that it's from the Culling devs, and like been like, look, they're doing a good job with this one. I think they've learned to let the Culling go. And now they've just come along and shit on all my effort. I'm so disappointed in it. That all I could think of is I can't even recommend Don't Die Minerva anymore because this fucking Xavier needs to learn. I don't know.
It's a bummer.
I'm sad about it.
Dark Mika is like, this fuckface scum fuck company needs to shut the fuck down, this piece of shit. I'm like, they came on the show. They're not horrible people. They just,
I mean, they're everyday people, but they're really not making solid business decisions
here. Not at all. It's a horrible business decision. Hopefully they take this feedback and they just turn it around. And I don't know. I don't know what the hell they could do with the Culling to make it, I don't know, approachable again.
Leave it alone. They really need to quit burying it in the pet cemetery.
Yeah.
Let it go.
Let it go. Let it go. Oh, man. So, yeah, that's the news I got. Anything you want to talk about?
No, not a thing.
You ready to just dive into reviews?
Fuck it. Let's go.
All right. And first up, we got to bring in a friend. Cole, you ready for this? Jacob's here.
You're using the term friend awful loosely today.
Yeah, well, that's because I called him out on his shit the other day on Twitter.
That was funny. I didn't even realize that, and it was hilarious that you pointed that out.
I was just like, what? Wait a second.
Episode with all our friends. Jacob's not on it.
Yeah.
Best episode. And I was just like,
oh, wait, okay. Tim's not on this. Oh, damn it. Yes, he is. Yeah.
Dark Mika wasn't on that one, was she?
She's not. She wasn't, and Surly, nah, I wasn't on either. Mm. So,
but she just does emails, so.
Yeah.
So we are apparently like the trio of people who are not friends.
Y'all are the redheaded stepchildren.
Yeah, well, Serlina's on this one later on, and you're here now, so are you going to quit bitching?
Nah.
Of course not. Why would you?
It's my mission in life to be a pain in the ass to you.
I can tell. But do you want to talk reviews?
Yeah, we could do that.
All right, because first game to talk about tonight is called Super Mega Baseball 3, developed and published by Metalhead Software, released May 13th on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and PC for $44.99. Run up the score in a relaxed slugfest or push the limits of your reflexes in this refined baseball simulator. The third entry in this series features an all-new franchise mode, major graphical enhancements, and on-field additions including pickoffs and situational player traits. Jacob, tell us about Super Mega Baseball 3.
Joe, I gotta tell you, this game is the absolute worst first-person shooter I've ever played.
Okay.
As a baseball game, I mean, yeah, it's pretty good. But as a first-person shooter, I found it very lacking.
So okay, well, good.
That's my review.
We're gonna need a little bit more than that.
Oh, my God. All right, so... so I was a really big fan of Super Mega Baseball 2, which kind of came out of nowhere for me. And one of the things I really enjoyed about it was that it was a very casual, almost arcadey kind of game.
Did you play the original Super Mega Baseball, the very first one?
I played a little bit because, they made it available for free one time. I have it. I thought it was okay. I thought Super Mega Baseball 2 was far superior because that was the first one I got into, and so I've never really returned to the original, but whatever. And I loved it, especially because with sports games, over like the last like 20 years with everyone moving into like 3D stuff, so 20, 25 years, it's pretty much, in my opinion, as somebody who's an outsider for that kind of stuff, trying to get into it, it's essentially like, if you weren't playing this game 20 years ago, you can go fuck yourself. Like, there's no real training. Like, sure, there's a manual, but, like, there's no real explanation for how anything works. And so that was one of the things I really enjoyed about Super Mega Baseball 2 is that, you know, there was at least a guide in there to be like, hey, this is how this mechanic works. You don't really have to do it if you need it, but, you know, at least you know how.
Yeah.
So, anyway, so I love the game. Like, I've made a, like, we haven't made our compilation yet, but Joe and I have talked about making a compilation of all of our videos of just pitchers getting hit.
Yeah.
And I think I'm up to like 50 of them now. Like,
that's impressive.
It's pretty mm-hmm. sizable. Like, I live for hitting pitchers.
Cole, have you watched any clips of pitchers getting hit in Super Mega Baseball?
Not any specific clips. I did see Shiz stream it, and I saw him whacking the shit out of the pitchers and stuff.
Yeah, it's highly entertaining. So anyways, so Joe's just like, hey, you want to review Super Mega Baseball 3? And I'm like, yes,
no, please. No, that's not how
it went. All right, fine. I begged for it.
Yes, there fine. You go.
Like the bitch that you are.
Anyway, and then Joe's just like, well, I got a copy. You want to review it? And then I'm like, yes, daddy, please. Anyway, so with this new one, the graphics are majorly updated. Like, and I wasn't going for a pun on that one. So the graphics are majorly updated. And I've got to say, like, also on top of it, like, it plays a bit different than Super Mega Baseball 2. Like, it's definitely heading towards, like, a more realistic approach. Now, I mean, you could still dial it back and still get that arcadey feel, like, the casual feel that I like so much from Super Mega Baseball 2. And, I mean, it's just... I don't know. It's still a ton of fun. There's a lot of customization with it. If you want to just customize players, you can customize players. If you want to create new teams, they've got like 200 plus customizable teams that you can play with. It's like that part's nothing short of incredible to me.
I know Super Mega Baseball 2 had a lot of team DLC, so I can only wonder if we're going to see more of that in the future with Super Mega Baseball 3 or not.
I'm hoping that we get more stadiums. Like, at least, and I mean, I'm hoping for that much. I mean, some of the DLC for Super Mega Baseball 2 was really just like, oh, well, here's some poses. Like, here's some, like...
Yeah, it was team creation stuff.
Yeah, which, I mean, if that's what you were into, then cool, but I don't know. That DLC I wasn't particularly impressed with, but I did enjoy the new stadiums that got introduced. And with this, like, the stadiums, holy shit, they look so good in this version. Like, did you check them all out, Joe?
Not all of them. I've seen a good handful of them. It's a beautiful game overall.
Yeah.
I notice it's not as colorful and vibrant as 2. It seems like they dialed the brightness down a little bit to make it more lifelike and more muted, it seems, but it's still really good.
Yeah. Especially with, like, players from previous games, I noticed, like, skin tone got kind of hinky on that one. Everybody's either, like, super white or super dark. I don't know if you picked up on that with some of the teams, because, like, I remember some of the players specifically, especially because I played as Nemesis so often. And it's just, like, how the players look from one game to the next, I don't know if they really paid attention to it, but it's just like everyone still looks fantastic. Like the character models, like I do appreciate that they're not as cartoony as they used to be. But I don't know. Still, some of the anatomy choices are still kind of weird. Like some of the players' feet. Some people I'm not quite sure how they actually stand, just because like the feet look like they're so tiny. Did you notice that? At all or what?
I have not been looking at feet. I guess we know what your fetish is.
No, it's not, dude. You see them.
Nobody's
when they step,
surprised.
step up to the plate.
I know, but I don't really stare at the feet. I haven't paid attention to the feet. I'm usually hitting A to get through that.
I don't know. I look at the player models. Like, I don't...
Well, that's anyway. Because you're a good reviewer, and I had just
okay,
wanted
now, calm
to
down. I wouldn't go that play far. The calm down.
That is fair. That is fair. Okay. So, anyways, so you can bump up the difficulty on the game, same as the previous game, from 0 to 100. 100 is like, have fun, you're not going to win. 0 is you're going to have like cartoony scores going on. Like, I regularly get like 50-0 wins on that. So, you know, if you're just beginning, it's a good place to start with that. If you want to bump it up a little bit, that's cool, but the game doesn't really care otherwise. There's multiple modes. There's pennant race. There's exhibition games you can just play, so you can just do little one-offs. You can do complete seasons. There's now a new franchise mode, which I didn't get to tool around with too much, but it's a standard franchise mode from any other sports game. So, I mean, I do appreciate that, and I'm sure that all the baseball fans are appreciating that as well. Because if you think about the market, the only other two games that we have are MLB The Show and RBI Baseball, like, it'll be 20 this year, which I did get a review copy of this year, and I was very disappointed.
Yeah, we didn't get that one this year. Our contact at MLB, no longer there, so unfortunately we didn't hear back on covering MLB this year.
I just figured they hate my guts.
Maybe. Very possible.
It's essentially been the same review both games that I played. So
I mean, I hate your guts. So
I mean, that's
it's very possible. That's fair. They
you are
also
decidedly quite hateable.
Thank you, Cole. I
every now and then I just pop up to knock you down a peg.
Decidedly quite hateable. I really do enjoy that quote.
It's gonna be on his tombstone.
Decidedly quite hateable. Actually, I think I'm gonna add that to my Twitter profile. So anyways, of course there's also an online mode. I didn't ever get around to playing with that, but
coward.
And
he went all out of the way to say he was a better reviewer and then listen to this.
Well,
listen to this shit.
Anyway, crap, Cole. Now I lost my train of thought.
Choo-choo, motherfucker.
Cole, have you played any of the Super Mega Baseball games?
Nope, I don't do the sports balls.
No?
When there are balls in sports, I am out of there.
You gotta give Super Mega Baseball 3
a
shot.
No, I definitely don't. We had this discussion earlier about golf. It's just not my thing. I can't do sports.
You can't hit two buttons to make a ball go whoosh.
Nope.
It's difficult.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, with this game, one of the things I noticed, it really seems like pitchers are more likely to like try to get a guy out. I don't know if you noticed that with that, Joe.
In what way? Because, like, what do you mean?
Well, now, there's the distinct possibility that this was in previous games that I didn't notice about, but you now have the ability to, or at least the game told me this time, that I have the ability to step off the mound and, like, quickly toss it to one of my bases. Now
I believe that's new.
That is new? Okay.
I believe so.
Yeah, and it seems like the pitchers are really, they're really trying to use it, like the AI. They'll frequently bust that out during the game. It is harder to hit home runs, it seems like. Now, at the same time, there is the possibility that I'm not far enough in my season to have, like, completely destroyed my league to make it so, like, I could just, you know, hit a few home runs off of whatever. But overall, like, the changes for the game seem to be better.
Hello?
Okay, bye.
I just got an Amber Alert on my phone, so it's possible that he may have gotten one on his.
Mm-hmm.
Jacob, are you there?
Hello?
Are you there?
Yeah, my phone dropped a call because I got an Amber Alert.
Yep.
Fucking Jacob.
Yeah, I got the same thing on my phone, so.
Yeah, that was weird. So where did it cut me off at?
I don't remember.
Okay.
You all were right, talking so anyway. About some shit.
It involves balls.
Well, Cole, I mean, if it's a discussion about balls, I mean, that's quite a bit of different things for me, you know?
I think the big question that needs to be addressed is with this year's release is the fact that it's $45. I know the game has steadily, it seems, gone up in price with each release. This one seems to be a pretty big leap. Oh, what was the last one? Do you remember the price of Mega Baseball 2?
I don't know, because I got it for free.
I believe it was half price of what this one is. Like 25, maybe?
I wanted to say 25.
I thought it was 30 for some reason.
But even
no,
still,
you're a dirty liar.
Even still, it is a noticeable hike up to $45. Do you feel that the price tag is warranted? Do you feel that the content is there?
Hold on. Because I'm actually not done discussing the game yet.
Okay.
The Super Mega Baseball 2 was $19.99.
Oh, 19. There you go.
Yeah, I know, but I think that price went down.
I don't know.
Well, look, I don't like your attitude. It can go down. Now what?
Listen here, Cole. I don't like your guff. I've never liked your guff. In fact, if we were in a kitchen right now, I'd throw rice in your face.
Rude.
Do you call me rude or a prude?
Both. I said rude, but if the shoe fits, then, you know, goddammit, wear it.
excuse me, I'm the one talking about balls here, so...
So, yeah, talk about balls.
Obvious. Well, they're sweaty, hairy.
No. You know. No.
Oh, right, baseballs.
Yes.
Sorry. Anyway.
I'm so sorry, Metalhead. I am so sorry.
We're not sorry.
No, we're not.
I am.
Okay. Well, that's your fault for having us on the show.
True.
All right. Anyway, so my big issue with Super Mega Baseball 2 is that, or sorry, 3. And this is actually an issue with the second game too. I do appreciate that it's more like it does explain things a little bit more, but then there's also a ton of stuff that it still doesn't take the time to explain. Like with Super Mega Baseball 3, like one of the things I always liked doing was going over into custom teams, building up my team, and then like giving them stats that are like godlike, so everyone's stuck at 99 for everything. And the thing is that it had been so long since I'd customized a team, I didn't know how to do it. And I looked in the game for instructions and all that kind of stuff, and the instructions aren't there. Like, they just literally aren't there in the game itself. So I go back into Super Mega Baseball 2, you know, to see, oh, maybe there's instructions there and I just forgot them. They weren't there either. I actually had to go into the Reddit for Super Mega Baseball 2 and look through questions that people had asked just to figure out how to customize my own team. Like, that's really something that you'd figure that's something easy, that it shouldn't take, you know, all these ridiculous steps just to figure out how to do something.
Yeah.
And with that, like, there's still no, like, home run derby mode, which I'd suggested back for Super Mega Baseball 2. There's no batting cage either, which is just... I just find that super ridiculously frustrating because I still don't quite get the concept of power hits. Like, maybe it's just me, but I'd like a environment within the game where I could just be in a batting cage and just try power hitting just so I could figure out, like, is there a tell? Like, is there a certain point in time where I just need to start up my swing? Like, what is it?
Yeah, hold X when the pitcher is just about ready to throw it, and then release when the ball's ready to be hit.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what I've been trying, and it still doesn't seem to work, which is why I'd rather be trying that out in a, like, batting cage session.
Yeah.
Instead of having to do that during the middle of a game.
Makes sense.
I do like their approach of like, hey, just start up a like shitty exhibition game. We'll walk you through it. But like, it's just like all they give you are like lines of directions. Like, it's not as, I don't know, it's not as hands-on, and I don't like that. My other worry about the series is that with all this stuff, like the franchise mode, the much more real, like, it's still cartoony, but everything looks a heck of a lot better. And that price tag of $45, I'm just like, is this going to start heading in towards the territory of like Madden and like the show, all that kind of stuff? Not necessarily where we're going to get like a yearly edition of it, but it's just like, is like, it going to start
becoming
towards
too sim?
Right. Like, are we going to, is it becoming too much of a realistic game or a simulation thing? Like, I like the fact that Super Mega Baseball seems to be like, you know, a relaxed baseball game. And obviously, you know, those are fears that like are not actually factoring into my review, but it's something I actually worry about for the series in the future. So,
yeah,
I don't know.
Well, we still need a verdict. $45. What do you say?
$45. There is a ton of content within this game. More is coming. What was the thing that they said wasn't available at launch but will be? I forget what
it was. The team import. You can import your team from Super Mega Baseball 2.
Right, right.
That will be in an update soon after launch sometime.
Yeah. And of course, Metalhead supported the game with plenty of other updates. I think like as late as like 6 months ago, because I remember that, like, there was one time I booted it up and I had to update it, and I swore that suddenly I wasn't able to hit home runs as frequently as I used to.
You just suck.
Go fuck yourself, Joe. so pretty much again, for $45, you have to consider the game's competition. The show, which is only on PlayStation, or RBI Baseball 20, which, you know, for the last 2 years, my review was Home Run Derby's fun, everything else sucks.
Yeah.
So for $45, they've got themselves in a nice, neat little, you know, we've got you, like, you know, if you want a baseball game that doesn't suck and you're playing on, like, Switch or Xbox, you have to come to us.
Yeah.
Do I approve of $45 or think it's worth it? Yes, it's a completely solid game. I would have been more comfortable with $35, but, you know, for $45, it's still a game I really like. I highly recommend it. Like, it's a ridiculously solid baseball game, and I think the average baseball fan will be happy with it. So, yeah, I recommend it.
Cool beans. All right, you got one other game to talk about. That is called Formula Retro Racing, developed and published by Repixelate. Released May 15th on Xbox One for $12.99. I'm sorry. Formula Retro Racing is a retro-style arcade racing game that's influenced by the classic arcade racing games of the early 90s. Jacob, tell us about Formula Retro Racing.
So this game, Formula Retro Racing,
hard.
All right, fine. I'll just go on mute.
Anyway, you were saying.
Damn it. You know I wouldn't stay mute forever. yeah, it definitely takes, you know, the feel of mid-90s arcade racers. But, like, the one that I would compare it most to is Daytona by Sega, that classic arcade game. So pretty much you're in a Formula One racer. It's still kind of arcadey, but you know, you're trying to do Formula One racing with this. The levels start off pretty easy. I think there's 10 levels total, maybe 12, I forget. And some of them are built off of classic Formula One things, like there is a Monte Carlo level. The graphics. It looks like Daytona. Like, it looks like it got made by the same crew that made Daytona. I really enjoyed.
I was gonna say visually, it reminds me more like Virtual Racing.
I never played it, so
that has the like the older 32-bit polygon style era visuals.
Yeah, I mean, well, Daytona had that too, didn't it?
Not really. Daytona was more polished.
Well,
am I thinking of the remastered Daytona? I don't remember, dude. I'm too old for this.
Huh?
I think we've covered that. Cole is going to have me shot. Probably within the next couple of months. Just out of my misery.
It, you know, I'm out here doing the Lord's work, so we'll see.
I mean, and after all, I mean, she will be able to hide the body pretty well. I mean,
in Redneck Land, nobody can hear you die.
I mean, does your county even have cops, or is it state troopers?
The county does, yes, but the town does not.
Well, I mean, that's standard. Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, you got that going for you, Joe? I don't know.
It takes them about an hour and a half to get here, but they do exist.
So that's an hour and a half head start.
Yeah.
That's a plus. Anyway, so it reminded me a lot of, like, the Daytona stuff. The controls seem pretty solid for it. I found the AI to be a tad bullshit at times.
Yeah, I noticed that there would be plenty of times in a race where I would be going max speed, and somehow these motherfuckers would still be passing me.
Well, I mean, they probably were drafting you. I mean, but I don't...
At the speed that they would pass me, it just... I don't know. Something was fishy.
Just like... I also noticed, like, that there would be races where it's just like... I'd be in for... Like, it came up a lot during the elimination ones, where it's just like, I'd be in like fourth or fifth place, and like third place would be somewhere like halfway across the track. Like there'd be literally no way for me to ever catch up with them.
Yeah.
And one time
the race is tough.
Yeah. I think the best I've done is eighth place on one of those. I haven't gotten first in any of them yet. And then also at one point, like I saw, I was in fourth place, and third place all of a sudden just got this like, poof, and just like shot up like 50 feet. And I'm just like, what the fuck was that? Like, was that a glitch or was that just the AI being shitty? So there's that. I don't know. The controls felt solid, but at the same time, I felt like braking really didn't do much. I felt like I did better just letting off the gas instead of like using the brake ever.
Yeah, I don't think I hit the left trigger one time. I don't think I rarely let go of the right trigger. So much of the game, you could hold down the trigger the entire time and just, well, I guess in some of those middle tracks, I focused mainly on like the oval and the first and the fifth tracks. I like.
Yeah. And then the music, which, you know, I enjoyed. I don't know if I could stand like eight or so laps of it. Like, I thought it was okay for, like, the first 2 minutes, and then it was just like, holy crap, guys. I really don't want to keep sitting through this same song, which I'm only going to hear during one race. That especially got tough during the elimination stuff. And then on top of it, like, I go into, like, the settings for this game, and I find out the only thing that you could change is the volume on stuff. Which I was just like, what?
They could use with some more settings.
Yeah. Like just changing the look of the game and stuff like that. But what I found really crazy about the game, there's no multiplayer whatsoever. And I was just like, not even local. Like I don't know. It's 2020, like, guys, like, even having local multiplayer, like, would have been a boon, but I was just like, it's a solid single-player game, but I was not a fan of the final product. And then actually before I came on the podcast, I did look up the price and I was just like, oof, like not with no local multiplayer. Come on, man. Like $12. That's kind of steep.
I agree. The price is kind of high. I didn't mind the game though. I had a lot of fun with it.
I thought the regular races were okay. I mean, it's fun for what it is, but I don't know.
I wish progression wasn't as slow as it is. It seems like, you know, some of those achievements you have to get like 400 race points to get to, and beating something on the beginner only gets you 20. On normal, the best finish I was able to get was like 10th on normal difficulty. I didn't even try something on hard yet, so I'm worried to see how badly I do on that.
Yeah, the AI definitely needs to be dialed back. Like, even on beginner, there were some courses where even after having played it for a fourth time, like, I still wasn't getting out of the top 15. And it was just like, this is beginner. Like, come on, dude. Like,
although I did enjoy the explosion physics when cars would collide and they would just explode into pieces.
That was, I will admit, that was kind of fun. At the same time, there would be like times where it was like 10 seconds into the race and I already exploded. Which I was just like, what? Like, come on, man. And while I'm thinking of it, the main thing that I absolutely detested about this game, was when you would go, to a checkpoint or any of that kind of stuff, that would stay flashing on your screen for like 4 or 5 seconds, way too long.
Yeah, it would definitely get in the way.
Yeah, and especially in that first, course in the tunnel, like you would easily lose the position of like 3 or 4 guys because they would all get hidden under that like checkpoint. Like, you know, hooray, you get 28 more seconds. Good for you.
I didn't lose that many places. I think you just
No. I wasn't saying places. No, I would lose, like, I wouldn't be able to tell where the other racers were because they were all hidden by that text. Like, I remember it really only being a problem on that first track, but it was still annoying as hell, like, everywhere else. And I'm hoping that the devs will come back and fix something like that because that seems like it would be an easy fix. At the same time, I thought it was really fun, like when it's counting down to 3, 2, 1, go, like how those numbers were on the track. I dug that. I thought that was fun, but the checkpoint stuff, that was ridiculous.
Yeah. I know overall $13, I still thought it was enjoyable. I personally would give it a try. I think if you're looking for some old school Daytona style action, it's bright, it's colorful, it's fun, it's entertaining. It's got a bunch of tracks. It's got 5 at the start. It's got a couple unlockable tracks. I don't see a huge deal being $13. I wish it were 10.
I would be more comfortable if it was 10. But honestly, it's that that lack of couch multiplayer. I get that it would take it a lot to have like online multiplayer, you know, especially for an indie title, but like, come on, couch multiplayer, you can't have that. Like, that's,
well, I look for forward to couch multiplayer in your upcoming game, Jacob.
I'm sorry, what?
Rip.
I didn't get it. I didn't hear.
I said I look forward to couch co-op in your upcoming game.
It's all right, fine. That's a challenge.
Saying do it better. If you're gonna bitch about it, do it better.
All right, well, fine. I'm going to enroll in my local college now. I'll see you in 20 years.
And I'm okay with 20 years.
You can interview.
Cole, that's just because you just don't want to talk to me for 20 years.
Well, see the problem here.
Oh, my Lord. Jacob, it is always good having you on the show, chatting and hanging out with us. Do you have any final words before we move on?
You know, you actually never got, like, you know, do I recommend this game at all? you know,
like twice.
No, we didn't.
Yeah,
no, we did. No, not really.
Okay, anyways, then buy it, try it, deny it. What's your verdict?
Try it.
Okay.
I would wait for a sale, but
okay,
you know, it's solid single player, but eh. Anyway,
Root Beer says we'll start a Patreon for your tuition.
All right. Fantastic. I hope it has as much success as the SML podcast Patreon.
Well, Jacob sucks, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. God damn it.
So much. Friggin' Jacob. I don't even want to do the rest of this show anymore. He drags it down for me.
Just totally ruined it. Are you two buried in the pet cemetery now?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I am.
Jacob,
I hope we remember what that joke is tomorrow.
Yeah, we probably won't. I'm on that kick because me and number one watched Pet Sematary not too long ago. And so, like, I've been making references to it because now my kid gets it.
Hmm.
Not the new one. Fuck that. I don't watch new, well, no, classics. The best thing about having a teenager is that, like, you get to go back through all the super cool ass shit you watched as a kid and a teen, and they get it now. And it's like, yes.
I wouldn't know that feeling. So I've been making her
watch. Well, that's okay, because at least you don't have to deal with the parts where, like, they eat all your food and steal all your money.
Man, like, we have cats. They steal all our money.
That is true. But you know what? If you wanted to watch a movie, they weren't going to object to it for the last 16 years. So
true.
You know.
Anyway, you're talking about what you watch. Talking about Pet Sematary and Ghost. The next game to talk about leads right into this. Ghost Files: Memory of a Crime. The ghosts.
Good segue. Garbage segue, but I'll let you have it.
Yeah. So anyway, Ghost Files, Memory of a Crime, developed by Brave Giant, published by Artifex Mundi, released May 8th on Xbox One for $14.99. The life of a private detective is tough, and no one knows it better than Arthur Christie, an ex-cop, effective and tough as a nail. This time he will face an investigation in which not only the truth is at stake, but also his life. Cole, tell us about Ghost Files.
This is, I want to say the second, but it might be the third. I'm doing some math here real quick. I'm going to stick with it being second. This is the second Artifex Mundi game that I have played that did not have a female lead. And I am so thrown off. I was like, as soon as I loaded up and I realized that you're the dude, I'm like, fuck it, 0 out of 10. Artifex has let me down again.
What was developed by Brave Giant?
I think the other one was developed by Brave Giant.
Maybe. So Brave Giant needs to get their shit together.
They need to get their shit together. I pick up Artifex Mundi games for two reasons. Strong female leads and point and click goodness. Okay? Two things. You have two jobs.
Does it at least
work one of them?
Does it at least take care of the other job?
Yes.
Cool.
Which, you know, is great. I will say that the outsourced Artifex Mundi games, where a different developer handles them and Artifex just publishes them, they still have that Artifex look. But they are the ones that suffer with the $15 price tag. It's a little harder to be like, oh yeah, it fits the $15 price tag. When they were 10, it was a little easier to be like, it's fine. You know, but they do have animations that are not as smooth, and this one is no exception to the rule. In the beginning, I was really, really hopeful. I was like, okay, the facial animations are pretty solid. And then there's like one sequence where the dude goes to look over his shoulder and he like straight up 180s his neck, and you're like, oh, that's a problem. That's bad animation. and here's the thing for me. I have really low standards. I can tolerate a lot when it comes to these games because I enjoy them so much. But the more that I play Ghost Files, the more that I was like, the animation is getting worse as it goes. And by the end, there is straight up a scene where a female character model runs up some stairs, and it looks like there was a paper doll, jagged edges and all, moving it through the scene.
Hmm.
And I was so sad because the whole point of Artifex Monday raising their prices from 10 to 15 was to have better quality graphics.
Yeah.
And I don't think that Ghost Files really justifies that price tag at this time. Gameplay wise, it's solid. It's a, you know, typical Artifex Monday game. It's an easy completion. You don't even have to play it on expert if you want the completion. Which again seems to be another, trademark of like when an outside developer handles the game and Artifex just publishes it. Oftentimes those are the game series that won't have, a bonus chapter, although Ghost Files does have a bonus chapter. But you usually can 1K it, playing it in casual, and doing it once through if you use a guide to find the morphing objects. The morphing objects are my number one complaint in pretty much every Artifex Monday game where they like started being implemented. I can handle them when they are used as like a collectible and just kind of world bound. But Ghost Files commits a cardinal sin. Every hidden object seen has a morphing object. So if you don't know that when you go into it, as I did not, you can be incredibly frustrated sitting there looking at the scene over and over and over without realizing that while you're looking on the right, the object over on the left is morphing into what you need, and by the time you get back to the left, it's morphed away from it again.
No.
There's no timers to worry about unless you're trying to get the achievement for being quick. But in general, I just find the whole idea of morphing objects in a hidden object puzzle problematic in and of itself. They're already kind of convoluted enough to find things in, especially given, and Ghost Files does this as well. I don't remember the specific term, but because these games are not produced in English, there are occasionally terms that are used for things that may be hidden in the puzzles where you legit just have to Google it because you don't know what it is. It might be a term you've never heard of before. Unfortunately, I played this several days ago and I didn't write it down which one it specifically was. And I don't remember and I apologize. But I do remember just throwing my hands up and going, I have to Google it. I don't know what I'm looking for. but it's even that is a tolerable issue to have, because at least if you search for it, then you know what you're looking inside the puzzle for. Whereas when you're doing a hidden object scene where there's a morphing item, you have no idea what to look for because you don't know what it's morphing between. So you might be looking for a wing nut, but it may originally be presented in the scene as a rose. And so you might have a scene full of flowers where there's a wing nut hit that's occasionally turning into a rose that's occasionally turning back into a wing nut. How the fuck are you supposed to know what you're looking for there? It's just a matter of sitting and waiting until your eyes cross that area of the scene at the right time. And that is my number one complaint. Like, I know a lot of people will bitch about the rough animation, but the straight up morphing object inside a hidden object scene, that's not cool. I can't get on board on that. Beyond all that, the story is a little predictable. It's not something that's gonna rattle your bones. I thought it was probably one of the more dull Artifex Monday ones. Just on the premise of what it is, it does actually deal with some pretty like difficult to swallow subject matter, though, and that might be something to take into consideration before picking it up as well. Did you die?
Yes.
Was I muted the whole time?
Yes, you were, actually.
No.
No, I didn't know if you had anything else to say there.
But no, I don't want to like outright say what the difficult subject matter is, but I also like I want people to know that they may need to watch out, but I don't want to spoil it because it is a big part of the story.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you have any kind of traumatic trigger issues, maybe check the story of this one first before you buy it.
Well, overall, $15 on Ghost Files. What do you think of it?
I really don't want to break the streak. For me, it's a buy it because I love the Artifacts Mundi games and I can tolerate when the animation gets a little janky. But I think for most people, it's probably going to be a try it. If it's not something that you already know you're going to be into and enjoy, it's not the strongest, entry from Artifacts Mundi's, catalog that's going to make you be the one that go, oh, these are all fantastic. I have to go buy every one. This is kind of like the one you pick up because you go, well, shit, I played all the others. Might as well play this one. And then it kind of makes me sad because it breaks the streak, you know?
Yeah. So it's not bad. It's just, it's not their best.
It's exactly. I mean, if you were looking at this one and you were judging it against all the others, I would have to say this would probably be the low man on the totem pole for ones to choose.
All right. Well, next game to talk about is called Potata Fairy Flower, developed by Potata Company, published by Sometimes You, released May 13th on Xbox One and PS4 for $14.99. This adventure platformer tells a story of a young witch exploring fairy forests to find herself and save her home. Join her quest now. Immerse yourself into a picture-perfect fantasy. Solve numerous puzzles, fight enemies, reveal all the secrets, and don't forget to save the world. Cole, tell us about Potata.
I have never seen a game be so adorable and so demoralizing at the same time. I love the art style for Potata. I think that it's incredibly charming, but the entire premise is like how much everybody hates this little girl because she just ruins everything. And it's really hard to choke down the way everybody in her community talks to her. Carnage says it has a female lead, 10 out of 10. It has a female lead that is a ginger. Thank you very fucking much. So yes, 10 out of 10 in that. And I'm very on board with that. I think that they did a really good job of making her a legitimate character, even as everybody else kind of shits on her. She just doesn't care and she's happy go lucky and she gets it done anyway. Which is really charming to see. I got a lot of like classic children's storybook vibe just from the art style and from how the character just like has her head up through it all and doesn't give a fuck and just goes on about her way. I really found that charming. But it is not a kid friendly platformer because it is surprisingly difficult. Definitely caught me off guard with how much effort it took to get through some of the puzzles. They're well thought out, and for the most part, they're fairly intuitive. There are times where I would catch myself just kind of staring at something, feeling like the biggest dumbass in the world, though. And I don't know if maybe it's because I was playing it late and I was kind of tired and had a long day, but I would just look at, sometimes there would be like, the first time I encountered some of the plants that you have to feed to make them go to sleep, I was like, okay, that's easy enough. I got that. And then the next plant you come across is like, it has its mouth wide open, but it's laying horizontally. And so I was like, okay, feed it. And then it goes away, but you can't. And it took me for fucking ever to realize that I needed to go find a little tiny piece of wood that somehow magically becomes a giant plank that holds its mouth open so you could walk across it. And I think that might be one of the more difficult things about the game because things don't seem like they're going to fit somewhere. Like if you think, okay, I need a plank of wood, you're going to expect to see a fairly decent sized plank of wood somewhere. that you're going to need make fit into an area. But that's not the case. Like, it's just going to be a little tiny half-inch piece of wood sprite on the screen, and you're like, that's not going to do shit. And then you use it, and it's somehow magically this big plank. Root Beer is tickled that I'm saying wood, but that is a big part of the game. I mean, she's a fairy. So, but overall, I think the difficulty for it is very well balanced, and then I didn't feel like I was dying or fucking up because the game wasn't balanced or was somehow unfair. It was always because I had done something kind of oblivious.
Proud of you.
Or, you know, like I would just kind of jump into it a bit. I have a really bad habit in platformers where I'm like, let's see what's down there. And then I just jump just on the off chance that there is a secret. And then I just have to kind of, you know, live with my repercussions of what I've done. So, I mean, any time that I did fuck up, it was generally because I had pulled some kind of stunt like that, as opposed to the game making me do something out of the ordinary. But yeah, it's not a platformer that you're going to sit down and breeze through in an hour or even two. You're going to need to take your time. You're going to need to sleuth it out and pay attention to the puzzles and actually work at it and get through it. And at least you feel accomplished when you get through it, because you're like, well, I did it. It might have took me 6 days, but I did it. It's not something that, you know, you're just going to be like mindlessly clicking through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, overall, $15. What do you think?
I think it's a pretty solid platformer for $15, and I'm okay with it. Yeah, I give it a buy it.
Cool.
I love the art. The art alone is a buy it. It's super cute.
Yeah, it's a beautiful game.
Yeah, it really is.
All right, next game to talk about is called Megabyte Punch, developed and published by Team Reptile, released May 8th on the Switch for $19.99. Megabyte Punch is a fighting beat-em-up game in which you build your own fighter. As you travel through different environments, you battle other creatures to get their parts. Parts have their own powers and bonuses, like gun arms for a shoot ability, or powerful hips for a devastating pelvic thrust attack. Oh, my Lord.
Oh, dear.
Our friend Serlina covered this one, wrote in a review, and this is what she's got to say. Hello, SML friends and fam. It's me, Serlina, and this week I'm reviewing Megabyte Punch for the Nintendo Switch. Megabyte Punch is developed by Team Reptile and is a brawler where you get to customize your own fighter to punch, smash, and drill your way through mechanical baddies in order to save your world. Or you could forget all of that, get three of your friends together, and have a free-for-all with your highly customized fighter. Let's get on with the review. I really like how the game has two modes, an adventure mode and a fight mode. However, because I have no friends and I hate the internet, I wasn't able to try out the four-player battle royale mode, though I do appreciate that it's there. This review will focus on the adventure side of the game. You start out as a newly created Megac, M-E-G-A-C.
Seems legit to me.
There's going to be a lot of usage of that in this review, too.
Rip.
You start out as a newly created Megac, the little robot guy you play as, and it's your job to figure out what's driving the other Megacs crazy while also punching them until they explode. Yeah, that makes no sense, but the game justifies this robot-on-robot violence by saying that once a Megac loses its mind, there's no saving it. All right, I'll buy that for now. And then the game tells you to check out the village, and off you go. While the narrative may be slightly lacking, the humor certainly isn't. I suggest that you talk to every robot you can for some laughs. You also have access to a house, which is great starting out, where you can customize your fighter with different parts, colors, and even get some bonuses with your amiibo. There's a shop that cycles parts every time you come back to your village, and you'll be swimming in bits, so you might as well take advantage when you can. Let's talk about the gameplay. The controls in this game make sense, but also feel a bit wonky. You attack with A, jump with X, use special abilities with B, and open your inventory with Y. It makes sense, but in practice, I kept using my special abilities when I wanted to jump, and I would accidentally open my inventory when I wanted to use a special. By the by, the game does not pause when you look at your inventory, which was especially annoying when I was fighting a baddie. That may just be a personal pet peeve, but it's worth mentioning. You can map your button layout the way you want, but I'm lazy and didn't feel like it. Other than the control snafu, the game plays and flows well. Double jumps already unlocked at the start, as is wall slide. It's incredibly satisfying to literally punch a baddie into a wall, watch the wall reverberate from the impact, and said baddie explodes into bits.
Bits?
Bits,
bits you say?
Bits. Oh, no. Oh, no. I wasn't paying attention to the screen. Oh, no. No time. Thank you for the 100 biddies. Call, thank you for the 50, the 10, the 10, the 10, the 10, the 10. Norg, take it away.
Oh, dropping bits!
Oh, thank you, George.
Wet pancakes!
You said the magic word.
I did say the magic word. Oh, Lord.
Now I'm imagining, like, Pee-wee's Playhouse. The magic word! Ah!
Today's word is bits! Ah! Anyway, with your Megac, you can upgrade it with various parts that you can find or buy. You can upgrade your head, shoulders, both arms, both legs, your chest, and your hips. Each upgrade gives a new look, a certain buff, and maybe even a special ability. Do you want to shoot people with an arm blaster like Mega Man? With the right upgrade, you can. You'll get a ton of upgrades as you traverse the world, but the same ones do stack in your inventory. Unfortunately, you only have 7 slots, so you'll be destroying parts you already have to make room. Still, if you're able to finish a level, all of the parts that aren't equipped will go straight to your collection in your house, freeing up your slots, which is nifty. The level design in this game is strong, robust, and long. It's boxy but polished. You want to explore every nook and cranny, find every hidden item, but after you do it a few times, you begin to wonder exactly how long the levels are. I didn't mind all that much because the music was also banging. One final note, you do have boss battles at the end of each level, and these boss battles borrow heavily from Smash Brothers. I didn't mind it except for the fact that these bosses can hurt you easily, but it's harder for you to get hits on them. Still, if you're a Smash Brothers fanatic, you'll recognize this and breeze through the bosses. Megabyte Punch is available now on the Switch for $19.99, and should you buy this game, yes, you should buy this one. Again, I only played the adventure side and had a ton of fun. I'm hopeful that the online play will extend the game's life, but even if it doesn't, the adventure side will keep you entertained more than long enough for your monetary investment. All right, sounds good.
Yep.
I hope it comes to other platforms. That one sounds awesome.
Yeah, it does.
And thank you again for all the fucking bitty.
I'm trying to help you re-shitty your shitty compitty, but I don't want you to re-shitty your shitty compitty. I want you to buy a compitty.
Yeah, that's probably what's going to happen.
$1 at a time. I am working on it.
We'll get there. We'll get there.
Yeah.
Next game to talk about is called Ultimate Ski Jumping 2020, developed and published by Blue Sunset Games. It released May 8th on Xbox One for $9.99. Winter and summer competitions, even jumping on the moon and the beach, story mode, lots of training jumps, qualification rounds, and tournaments are waiting for you. Time to fly. Cole, tell us about Ultimate Ski Jumping 2020.
So, if you're playing the campaign, which I recommend that you do, you play as a little fellow named Andrew. I could not pronounce his last name if my life depended on it. And Andrew has a goal. Andrew wants to be the best ski jumper ever. But where Andrew lives, he cannot ski jump. So you start off like ski jumping in an alley in the middle of summer off of like the back of a car with some plywood on it. And at that point, you're like, you know, a little 10 meter jump or so. You're doing pretty good. But it's a good starting point for learning how to land and for getting your skis under you. As Andrew grows, he becomes more involved in skiing. He gets better. You get better. And he starts super participate in competitions. So at this point, you actually get to like do legitimate ski jumps, and you'll need to place in order to continue on through the campaign. So you're given a rating on how well you handle the jump and how, and as well as how far you actually make it before you land. It all seems so very technical, and I don't understand any of it. And I'd like to say that that I came away from Ultimate Ski Jumping with a better understanding of how to ski jump. I didn't. All I know is sometimes if I press A in the right place, I'm going to fly like a motherfucker, and then I'll hit the ground, and then I get points. And if I don't hit the metric, it's going to make me restart it over again.
Well, you also have to learn to lean properly, too, while
you're in the air. You do have to. And I don't feel like the campaign has taught me how to lean at all. This is where my gripe comes in with the game. Excuse me, I'm burping up pizza from dinner.
Proud of you.
Oh, that hurt. I'm going to have to take my medicine. This is my gripe with the game, because I played through the whole campaign and I was killing it. I'm like, boy, I don't know why, but I'm incredibly solid at this. I'm leaning the right way. I'm landing. I'm always coming in like in the top three. Like, the game is like, oh, Andrew has to place within the top 50th to continue on. And I'm like, fuck yeah, top three, here we go. And, you know, I'm like, I'm great. And then all of a sudden I got to the Olympics and the game gives me a notification that it has switched from casual to realistic difficulty. No way to change it back. Nothing I can do about it. I can't complete the campaign unless I make the jump in realistic difficulty and score within the top 10.
Man.
And no matter what I had learned, none of it meant shit. I went from getting hill records on every jump to I can't even meet the base red line.
Gee.
A little bit of warning that this shit could happen would have been really nice. There's just no indication. There's nothing that you can do about it. I don't think I'll ever complete the campaign. I made a conscious effort, but just the way the cookie crumbles. Now, there are other ways to play, thankfully, because if you go into it with the whole, I'm going to beat the campaign, everything's going to be great, you're fucked. You can also just do tournaments that are casual, they just put you against other AI players. One thing that I did find odd is that I have the game installed on a solid state drive, and after every jump, I would have to wait for the AI. You don't see the AI, you don't see their jump, you don't see their score until after everything is tallied. So, like, it was essentially a loading screen after every jump. And despite being on a solid state drive, it was so long. And I would just sit there and wait. And it was not as well optimized as it could have been, especially given that this is not a graphic heavy game. It is not even 3D. It is 2D pixel sprite, uses four buttons, if that many. It's basically just A, jump, A, land, and use the analog stick to, you know, lean properly. Super minimal. So I don't know why I had such an unbelievably long load time at the end of every round.
Yeah, that's weird.
That and the shuffle into realism without any any justification for it at all are really the only things that I complain about. Like, if I could just sit and in the tournament modes and just press A and land over and over and over and just constantly keep trying to like beat my best, that was when I was the happiest. One thing though, there is online. I didn't get to try it out. That's because I played this shit at like 3 a.m.
Yeah.
If we thought my habit of playing at 5 a.m. was bad and made it difficult for me to find matches, 3 a.m. is no goddamn better now that the school is out and my days and nights are fucked.
Well, that the game has only been out for like a week.
Yeah, there isn't anybody playing at that hour on anything except for Call of Duty at this point in the world. And that's only in Warzone, apparently, now.
What?
But it was, I just didn't get a chance to try that out. I can't justify whether it's good or bad. I think that it's probably interesting. I think that I say it all the time. I love to see indies implement online, and I think more should, and I'm grateful when they do.
Mm-hmm.
But at this point, too, I think that when a game does implement online, Game Pass is a beautiful place, because that gives you that player base that you won't otherwise have.
Yeah, well, I'm sure if it was up to the developer, they would definitely want their game on Game Pass. It comes down to Microsoft allowing it and signing it and whatever else.
I'm not sure what the whole situation there is, but I don't mean to be a broken record about it. It's just that it kind of is a given that if you're struggling with a player base, that seems like the most ideal way around it. Whether that happens or not, I don't know. But it's just a little thought I like to throw out into the universe. but yeah, I wish I could give a little more detail on how the online play worked out, but I was grateful that at least they implemented it, because this isn't the kind of game that I would have genuinely expect to have it.
Yeah.
So it's nice that it's there, even if I didn't get to spend a lot of time with it.
Yeah. Well, overall, $10 on Ultimate Ski Jumping. What do you think?
At $10 with online, I'm pretty good giving it a recommended try. It. I would be more inclined to say buy it, but that difficulty spike out of nowhere, I was just not a fan of that behavior.
Yeah.
So that's really the one thing that got me, that and the low times being what they were. But beyond that, I had a good time with it.
Awesome. Shout out to No Time for Games dropping another 50 bits, and Carnage dropped 5 as well. George.
Dropping bits!
Thank you, George. Should I play the long one?
You should. I'm going to mute because Sage is having a party.
Okay. I'm going to play it. George, take it away.
Dropping bits all over your pathetic face. Wet pancakes.
Oh, I love it.
George is fantastic.
George is fantastic. I love George.
Yes.
Good stuff.
Next.
Next game to talk about is called Island Saver, developed by Stormcloud Games, published by National Westminster Bank, released May 13th on Xbox One, is a free-to-play game. Dinland Inosaur DLC is also available for $4.79. A group of amazing islands needs your help. Hoard plastic waste is washed up, and you need to sort it out with your trusty trash blaster. But look out for the litter bugs. They love to mess, and they're out to muck things up. Cole, what is Island Saver?
Island Saver is if you mix Slime Rancher with Viva Pinata, and then the rabbit is having a party right now. if you mix Slime Rancher with Viva Pinata and replace the candy in the pinatas with coins coming out of the Stegosaurus's butts. So the base game is free to play. I played both the base game and the DLC. I'm going to mostly talk about the DLC because I think that it, for a $5 price tag, adds quite a bit to the game. It adds a whole different mission sequence. If you're playing the base game, you're pretty much just on an island with different types of animals, crabs, red pandas, anteaters, things of that nature. There's trash all over the place. I find it interesting that this game has been published by a bank, and it shows, but it's also got very heavy environmentalist vibes to it, because the island is covered in trash, and you have to use you're a bionaut, and you have to use your little ray gun to basically like suck up all the trash. So if you played Slime Rancher, you know how you use your little slime gun to suck up all the slimes and all the food for them. It's the exact same concept for Island Saver. Not sure how they're not getting hit with copyright, but whatever. That's their problem, not mine. So it's the exact same concept. You use your little bionaut ray gun thing, and you can suck up the trash, you can suck up water, you can suck up the different plants that grow, you can suck up money. One thing that's funny is that because this was published by a bank, when you leave money or when you earn money in the game, there is a tax bot that comes around and takes a percentage of your money. Although very progressive of them, because the tax bot then gives you tax coins and you use those tax coins to build bridges or unlock gates or have your trash taken away. They're very, very socialist little game, and I'm here for it. The litter bugs that have left the trash around are basically like this bluish black goo, and you need to use your water to clear the goo away from everything. And as you clear things away, then you gain access to it. So, like, if you need to use the recycling bin for cans, because you do have to recycle, you can't use it if it's covered in goo. You have to go and suck up some water, and then you squirt the goo away. And once it's clear, then you can put your cans in there and recycle. Once it's full, then you got to give it a tax coin, and it gets taken away, and you can continue to recycle when it comes back. Definitely some save the world vibes and you know, save your money vibes. When you put your money into the bank, after so long, you actually accrue interest on it. So it's meant to be like a kid-friendly way to explain some really pressing adult issues. And I'm very impressed by that. I was not expecting it at all. I was most intrigued by it because I was very big into Slime Rancher. I was very big into Viva Pinata, and that was what drew me in. And I thought that it would be a great way to introduce number three to that kind of gameplay. And I was even more intrigued by the dinosaur DLC, because number three is all about everything dinosaur. And I was like, yeah, I can, you know, get her into this kind of gameplay with some dinosaurs. It's win-win, really. And I enjoyed playing the game myself far more than I expected to. It's such a simple gameplay loop, and it's something that you can just kind of put your feet up and go around and clean up your island and earn some coins and clear away the litter bugs. It does get a little difficult because there's a happiness meter for your island on each area. And as you're clearing things away, the litter bugs get pissed at you for it. And so every so many increments up the happiness meter, the litter bugs will spawn. And you got to chase them around and shoot them with water to make them go away. If they get your gold doubloons, they'll run up to your shit and explode and make it corrupted again. And you have to go and do what you've done all over to get access to your things again. Genuinely really surprised by how much thought was put into it. Especially, as I said, with the DLC, there's a more fleshed out storyline involved. So you actually have, like, the little, I believe his name is Newton, has not paid his bills for his science lab. And the whole point of it is you have to go and help clear away the litter bugs and clean up the trash and earn enough coins that you can help Newton pay his bills and save his money so that the dinosaurs can come back. In order to save the dinosaurs, you have to grow the kind of plants that they want to eat. And this is where creativity really kicks in. One of my favorite plants that you grow for the T-Rexes is the king rib. And it's literally just this big giant ass plant that will open up and have a rack of ribs inside. And then you suck it up in your little gun. And then the T-Rex, they get pissed off if you get close to them, but you can't take any damage and you don't get hurt. Like, they'll run away from you or whatever. but if you shoot the ribs at them, they'll sit there with their mouth wide open, waiting for you to shoot the ribs into their faces, which I feel, okay?
I could use some ribs right now, too.
I can get on board with this. I am you, Mr. T-Rex. You shoot enough of the ribs at them, eventually you can save them. And then this is the point where it gets a little ridiculous. The T-Rex is not so bad. If I remember correctly, the T-Rex's bank slot, all of them are called bankimals instead of animals. So they're essentially piggy banks. So as they eat and eat and eat, they eventually get full of coins. And then they can't move. And then you have to go and suck the coins out of them so that they can turn back into normal bankimals. And that's how you save them. So then they get their color back and they roam around and they eat and it's super adorable. But the best part is that the Stegosaurus's coin slot, I shit you not, is a butthole. And I literally had to go behind the Stegosaurus and suck the coins out of its butt to save it.
Nice.
And number three, died laughing.
Well, given that the game is aimed towards 7 to 12-year-olds, I think it makes sense.
I don't know why they did it with the Stegosaurus, because there was literally no other animal I encountered that had a slot on its butt, but it's flat out under the tail and everything, and like it got too full and it was round and it was rocking back and forth with one coin poking out of its butt butt slot. And I had to go and suck it out to save it.
Oh, my Lord.
And for all I heard was, the dinosaur had a coin in its butt. If you don't understand, number three says butt, ridiculously funny. She pronounces it like butt. And I don't know why, but it's a riot. And just her going on and on and on about the Stegosaurus having a coin in its butt was too much. And it was very, very much worth the $5 price tag that I didn't have to pay to do this review. But I think everybody else should pay $5 just for that moment.
Well, then we have some verdicts to make. Island Saver is a free game, absolutely worth checking out, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, it's free, so why wouldn't
it's you? It's free. Fuck it, why not?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what else I said. Fuck it, why not?
The Dinosaur Island for $5. What do you think of that?
I think if you already play the base game and you're like, yeah, I can be on board with this, then I think the $5 DLC, at first I was a little concerned. I was like, oh, it's just going to be a reskinned island. But it had its own plot line and everything, and I was very impressed with it, and I think it's definitely worth it.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Yeah.
All right, final game to talk about tonight is called Shop Titans, developed and published by Kabam Games. It released May 5th on Steam as a free-to-play game with in-game microtransactions. Shop Titans is the ultimate RPG shopkeeper simulation. Craft powerful equipment, stock your shop, and sell to aspiring heroes at a markup. Hire heroes and explore dungeons to gather valuable materials to craft with. There's never a dull moment in the world of Shop Titans. Cole, tell us about this one.
So, I reviewed a game, was it Shop Quest, I think it was called? Or just Shop Keep? Might have just been Shop Keep. If I recall correctly, I made a comment about, have you ever wanted to be the shopkeeper in an RPG game and just do nothing but sell swords and shields and potions to the people who actually go do the cool stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Shop Titans is that same premise, but cute, because Shopkeep was horribly ugly. I got very used to it, but it was ugly. But Shop Titans is actually adorable. You have an adorable little character. You get to customize him or her. You can give them a name. They have their little shop. It starts off as a basic one little square room. You can decorate it however you want to, but the premise is the same. You're crafting swords, you're crafting glaives and clubs and shields and armor, and you put it up in your little shop and you sell it to the people who go do the actual adventures. But Shop Titans cranks it up to about 100 after that, in good ways and in bad. In good ways, you're not just running your little shop. You get to actually hire heroes like thieves and mages and rogues and warriors to go and do the adventures and the quests. And they actually get to wear the gear that you make for them, that you crafted, and go on these dungeon crawling adventures, and they bring you back valuable loot that you can use to craft cooler things that you can then sell at a nice little markup. The problem with this, though, is that literally every aspect of the game involves some kind of microtransaction. There are so many variations of currency, and I get it. The game is free to play. Somebody's got to pay the bills. Okay? I got it. I understand that. But in my entire time, and I want to point out that I got super addicted to Shop Titans because that is what I am prone to do. Yes. And I spent a lot of time with it. And literally every 5, 10, 15 minutes, something would pop up telling me I needed this kind of currency for that. Or there was a limited edition sale for 24 hours on this starter bundle and it was going to go away. And then I was going to have to pay full price. And, oh, if you send your group out on a quest, then it comes back and it tells you, here's the loot that you got. But, oh, if you subscribe to our $10 a month subscription service, $10 a month, by the way, this is the loot you could have had. And it's like, that's so fucking dirty, you know?
That is. I don't like that.
It is not good. At this point, you are letting me play one free game and then making me pay for the second game. And we already ranted about that earlier, okay? if the devs are listening to me right now and you're confused what I'm talking about, back up to where we talk about the culling, okay? Because that is very much how I felt playing Shop Titans. I'm playing it and I'm into it and I'm enjoying it, and then bam, give us your money. Bam, paywall. Bam, can't do that. You don't got enough diamonds. Oh, you got a chest when you went on your quest. Oh, sucks to be you. You don't have any keys. Would you like to buy some? Oh, here's another type of currency. Like every few minutes, it was introducing some new type of currency and telling you all the ways that you could buy it.
Damn.
If you want to upgrade your weapons that you make so that they cost less materials to build, well, you could either A, pay cash for more materials, B, wait it out, who the fuck wants to do that, or C, you could pay cash for these ascension shards, which will ascend the weapon, and then it doesn't cost as much material next time around. Really, though? Like, why can't...
It's disappointing, because you said how much you were really enjoying this game, but the more you tell me about it and the monetization, the more it's completely turning me off from wanting to try it.
And that's how I felt. Like, if I had known about the monetization in it, I would have been less inclined to jump into it. Because at this point, I'm invested. I've put like 30 fucking hours in here. I'm into it. It's one of those games that, you know, things upgrade in real time and you need to have a guild that'll come in and help you out or pay for it to upgrade or wait it out. And so I would find myself playing one game on the Xbox while I'd look over at my computer every now and then to see how my upgrades or my crafting was doing. And it was nice to have it running, but it was constantly bombarding me with reasons I should be giving them money instead of just letting me play. There's so much good in the game. There's so much creativity in the way that they've handled being the shopkeeper and how you send people on quests and how you upgrade your city and how you work with your guild. but it's like everything that they put that time and effort into creating was just so they could monetize it.
Damn.
I know.
Well, it's a free-to-play game. Is it worth checking out?
As a free-to-play, if you are the kind of person who does not give a fuck about the time commitment involved, and you're not going to be put off by all the constant, hey, buy this, hey, buy that, yeah, sure. I was super into it. I'm going to load that motherfucker up and check on my shop when we're done here. And I'm probably going to craft a whole bunch of shit, send my people on some quests, and be very happy about it. But I'm also just going to, like, look off to the side and pretend like all those ads aren't popping up at the same time.
Yeah. Oh, well. Hopefully they take some feedback and... Because I saw the Steam reviews. Like, so many Steam reviews are negative, thumbs down, because of the monetization and all the different currencies and everything else. There's got to be a limit.
And see, and here's the thing. I get, like I said, I get that there has to be some kind of monetization. Games don't grow on trees. Somebody had to foot the bill for the development. They need to get paid back. I understand that. And I understand being a creative and wanting to be paid for your work. Get it. I do. Pick one currency.
Yeah.
Pick one thing to ask people to pay you for and leave the rest alone. There were no less than 6 different currency types.
That's 6 ridiculous.
That I can think of off the top of my head, just sitting here imagining the screen, I can count 6. And that's incredibly frustrating.
Yeah, that's overkill.
Not include the subscription service.
Yeah, to have a subscription on top of all of that is fucking balls.
Yeah.
That is so ballsy. It's like, we're going to charge you for all of this stuff. Oh, and here's something else you can pay for on top of all of that.
And at $10 a month, I Game Pass.
Yeah, I'd rather spend that 10 on Game Pass. Exactly.
Like, and like I said, I don't mind to pay to support. If it was like $2-3 a month, I'd be like, all right, fine, take my money. You know? But $10 a month?
Nah.
Sorry, guys.
Oh, well. Well, that is it for this episode. Thanks for being here. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah, we got through it.
Yeah, another shout out to Jacob for being here and doing his Super Mega Baseball review.
Nah, fuck Jacob.
Yeah, pretty much. Big thanks to Jonathan again for coming on and chatting with us about Super Mash. The game is available now on Xbox, PlayStation, Switch, Epic Game Store, $20. It is absolutely worth checking out and picking up. We'll have a review on that one next week on the show. So yep. There's that to look forward to. Anything else you want to talk about, or are you good to?
No, I think I'm good.
You're good?
Yeah.
You're good?
Yeah.
Got any final words?
Was I supposed to talk about anything?
No.
Okay, then. No, I'm good. Bye.